All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we're diving into a real legal nail biter. We've got a fatal car crash, a whole bunch of lawsuits, and a $100,000 insurance payout hanging in the balance.
Oh, yeah. This one's a classic.
It's Provident Tradesmen's Bank v. Patterson, a Supreme Court case from 1968 that still has lawyers talking today.
It's a case with a twist.
And a pretty big one.
The car's owner, the guy at the center of it all, is MIA. Completely missing from the legal battle.
So it's like trying to solve a puzzle.
The key piece is missing.
Exactly. Okay, so let's set the stage. We've got Edward Dutcher. He's the car owner. But behind the wheel is Donald Cianci with John Lynch and John Harris along for the ride.
And tragically, their car ends up colliding with a truck. The truck driver's name was Thomas Smith.
That sounds awful.
It was. Cianci, Lynch, and Smith, the truck driver, all died as a result of the crash. And John Harris, the passenger, was seriously injured.
So that's the backdrop.
Right.
A terrible accident. And then, of course, comes the insurance drama. Dutcher had a $100,000 insurance policy with Lumbermen's Mutual Casualty Company.
And they did what insurance companies do.
Refused to pay.
They refused to defend Cianci's estate. Said he didn't have permission to drive the car.
So they were basically saying,
not our problem.
Biblical.
They claimed Cianci was outside the scope of any permission he might have had to use the car. Basically looking for any loophole to avoid that big payout.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we see that kind of thing all the time.
Okay.
But the legal fight didn't end there. Provident Tradesmen's Bank came into the picture representing Lynch's estate. They reached a settlement with Cianci's estate for $50,000.
But there was a problem.
Cianci's estate couldn't pay.
Exactly. Insolvent. So Provident was left empty-handed.
Makes sense that they'd go after the insurance company then.
That's exactly what they did. Figured if Cianci was covered by the policy, Lumbermen should be on the hook for that settlement amount. It's a pretty standard move when one party can't cough up the cash.
Smart. So they took him to federal court,
yeah. Right? Yep. Filed a lawsuit hoping to get a declaration from the court that Cianci was indeed allowed to drive Dutcher's car. If they could prove that they could force Lumbermen's to honor the policy and pay up.
Okay, I'm with you.
Now, the case ended up in federal court because all the parties were from different states.
Diversity jurisdiction.
You got it.
Which gives federal courts the power to hear cases involving parties from different states.
Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier that Dutcher, the car's owner, wasn't involved in this legal showdown.
Right.
How is that even possible? Seems like a pretty big detail to overlook.
Well, that's the million-dollar question. Yeah. And it's where things take a very interesting turn. Because remember, the lawsuit revolved around whether Cianci had permission to drive Dutcher's car.
And Dutcher wasn't even a part of the lawsuit.
Nope.
Wild.
That's what makes this case so fascinating.
So what happened when the courts realized Dutcher was missing from the equation?
Well, initially, things moved along pretty smoothly. The district court sided with Provident, concluding that Cianci did have permission to drive the car based on the evidence. But then the case went up on appeal.
Oh.
And that's when things got messy. The Court of Appeals threw a real wrench in the works. They brought up this thing called an indispensable party.
Indispensable party.
Basically, they said, hold on, you can't have a fair trial about Dutcher's car and his insurance policy without Dutcher being involved. His interests were too closely tied to the case. He had to be a part of it for it, to be fair.
So they wanted to add him to the lawsuit.
Right. But there was a snag. Remember diversity jurisdiction?
If Dutcher was from the same state as one of the other parties, the case would get kicked out of federal court.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened. Adding Dutcher destroyed the diversity jurisdiction.
So what did they do?
The Court of Appeals dismissed the whole case.
What? All that litigation down the drain over a technicality.
It seemed pretty drastic, but Provident wasn't giving up that easily.
They appealed to the Supreme Court.
That's right. And the Supreme Court, recognizing the importance of this whole indispensable party issue and how it could affect tons of other cases, agreed to hear it.
So now the Supreme Court has to figure out if a missing person can completely derail a lawsuit. This is where it gets really interesting.
Definitely. We're about to see how the Supreme Court grapples with Rule 19 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. You know the rule that deals with these indispensable party situations.
Yeah.
The whole legal world was watching because they knew whatever the Supreme Court decided would have a huge impact for years to come.
Okay, I am officially hooked. What happened next?
We'll get to that.
All right. All right, so we're back. And I'm still kind of hung up on that Court of Appeals decision. It seems wild that a case could get tossed just because one person, even an important one, wasn't named as a defendant.
Yeah, it definitely raises some questions.
Big ones. So let's get to the main event, the Supreme Court. What happened when this case landed in the highest court in the land?
The Supreme Court, with Justice Harlan leading the charge, decided to tackle this indispensable party issue head on. They knew they needed to provide some clarity, and their decision in Provident Tradesmen's Bank v. Patterson would end up reshaping how these situations are handled in courts all across the country.
So did they agree with the lower court?
Uh-uh.
Did they uphold the dismissal, or did they flip the script?
They flipped the script big time. Justice Harlan, in his opinion for the majority, rejected that rigid, all-or-nothing approach of the Court of Appeals. He came up with a more nuanced way to analyze these situations. A case-by-case approach that focused on practical consequences over strict legal technicalities.
So instead of just automatically chucking a case out because someone's missing, they're saying, let's take a closer look and see if we can make this work.
Exactly. It's about being fair and efficient.
I like it.
Justice Harlan laid out four very specific factors that courts should consider when figuring out if a missing party is really indispensable. You know, if their absence actually justifies dismissing the entire case.
Okay, so spill the beans. What are these four magical factors that can make or break a case?
All right, so the first factor is all about prejudice. The court has to ask, would the absent party, in this case Dutcher, be unfairly prejudiced if the case goes ahead without him? Would his legal rights be trampled on? Would he suffer some actual harm?
So in Dutcher's case, was there a real risk of prejudice?
Well, the Supreme Court decided that no, Dutcher's interests were already being represented in the federal case, even though he wasn't physically there. Remember, Lumbermans, the insurance company, was essentially making the same argument that Dutcher probably would have made, that Tionchi wasn't allowed to drive the car.
Ah, so it's like Dutcher had a stand-in.
Right.
Someone arguing his side of the story, even though he wasn't officially a party to the case.
Exactly. Plus, the Supreme Court pointed out that Dutcher was still involved in other lawsuits related to the accident that were going on in state court. So it's not like he had no legal options. He could still pursue his claims elsewhere.
Okay, that makes sense. So factor one, no real prejudice to Dutcher. What's next in this legal balancing act?
Factor two is all about finding creative solutions. The court asks, can we structure the judgment or the relief granted in a way that minimizes any potential harm to the absent party? Even if there's a chance of prejudice, can the court adjust things to make it more fair?
It's like adding some safety measures, making sure that even if someone isn't literally sitting at the table, their interests are still protected.
Yeah, like a legal safety net. And in this case, the Supreme Court suggested that the federal court could write its judgment in a way that wouldn't affect those other state court cases Dutcher was involved in. They were trying to limit the impact of their decision so it wouldn't tie his hands in those other legal battles.
So they're finding a way to keep things moving without shutting out the missing party. Smart. What's the third piece of this puzzle?
Factor three is all about practicality. The court has to ask, would a judgment in this case, even without Dutcher there, actually resolve the main issue? Can we get a clear resolution without getting bogged down in this missing person problem?
So the main issue being whether the insurance company has to pay up that $100,000, right?
That's it. And the Supreme Court, after looking at everything, decided that, yes, they could settle the insurance liability question without Dutcher being in that specific courtroom. Whether Tionchi had permission to drive Dutcher's car and therefore whether Lumbermans had to honor the policy could be determined without him being physically present.
Got it. So on to the final factor. What's the fourth thing that Justice Harlan brought to the table?
The fourth factor is all about options. It's a reality check for the court. They have to ask if this case gets dismissed because Dutcher isn't there. Do the plaintiffs have any other way to get justice? Are there other legal avenues they can explore, or is this their only shot?
So it's about making sure the legal system doesn't leave people hanging.
Right. And in this case, the Supreme Court pointed out that dismissing the federal case after 7 years of litigation would be pretty rough on Provident, the plaintiffs. There's no guarantee they could find another court to hear their case. And even if they did, they'd have to start from square one, reliving all those legal battles they'd already fought.
Yeah, that doesn't seem fair at all. So all four factors seem to point towards letting the case continue without Dutcher. But before we move on, I'm curious about something. Justice Harlan kept using the word pragmatic. What does that really mean in this context? It sounds like he's pushing for a more common sense approach to law.
You're exactly right. When Justice Harlan talks about pragmatism, he's contrasting it with that rigid, by-the-book approach of the Court of Appeals. He's basically saying that courts shouldn't get so caught up in ticking off every procedural box that they lose sight of the big picture. finding a fair and practical solution to a real problem.
It's like he's injecting a dose of reality into the legal system.
Exactly.
Rules are important, but they shouldn't be used to obstruct justice.
Well said. And that's a powerful takeaway from this case. Provident Tradesmen's Bank v. Patterson isn't just about a car accident or an insurance company trying to dodge a payout. It's a reminder that the law should be a tool for solving problems and ensuring fairness, not a maze of technicalities designed to trip people up.
Welcome back for the final part of our deep dive into Provident Tradesmen's Bank v. Patterson. We've followed this case from that tragic car accident all the way to the steps of the Supreme Court.
And we saw how a missing party almost completely derailed the pursuit of justice.
Totally.
We dug into Justice Harlan's pragmatic approach and how those four factors he laid out changed the way courts deal with these indispensable party problems. It's a case that reminds us that the law isn't supposed to be some rigid, unyielding structure. It's a tool we use to try to achieve fair and efficient outcomes.
Absolutely. And it's amazing how a case from 1968, a case about a car crash, is still relevant in courtrooms today.
Mm-hmm.
We even saw how it came up in that medical device case, Temple v. Synthes, all those years later.
It really shows you the power of well-reasoned legal principles. But let's switch gears for a minute. We've talked about the theory, the history, the impact, but what about the practical stuff? What can lawyers or anyone going through a legal battle learn from Provident Tradesmen's? What's the takeaway here?
That's a great question. I'm sure our listeners are wondering how they can apply all this to their own cases. What are the key moves? What should they be thinking about from the very beginning?
Well, one of the most important takeaways, and I really can't emphasize this enough, is to analyze early. Don't wait until you're in the thick of litigation to start thinking about potential indispensable parties. Tackle that issue right away.
So before even filing a lawsuit, lawyers should already be thinking about who needs to be a part of the case, not just who they'd like to include.
Exactly. And when you're looking at those potential parties, run them through that four-factor test we talked about. Think about what the consequences would be for everyone involved, not just whether having them there would be convenient or strategically advantageous.
So it's like a checklist.
Yeah.
A way for lawyers to anticipate problems and come up with solutions before those problems derail the whole case.
Right. Another practical tip is to remember those protective provisions we talked about. If there's a risk that a judgment could negatively impact a missing party, even if they're not officially part of the lawsuit, think about ways to minimize the damage. Can you structure the relief, you know, the wording of the judgment in a way that protects them?
It's about making sure that even those who aren't physically in the courtroom still have their interest protected.
That's a great way to put it. And one final point, and this is more strategic. Think about the mistakes the defendants made in Provident Tradesmen's. They waited until the appeal stage to bring up that whole indispensable party issue.
They didn't mention it at the trial court level. Why not?
Maybe they thought it was a good strategy, but it didn't work out for them. The Supreme Court wasn't happy about that delay tactic. They even suggested that waiting to spring that procedural trap wasn't exactly playing fair.
So the lesson is don't try to hide procedural issues.
Right. Be upfront about any potential problems. Courts appreciate honesty and fairness.
This has been such an interesting deep dive. We started with a tragic car accident and ended up in the Supreme Court uncovering this legal principle that still affects how lawsuits are fought and won today.
It shows that the law is always changing, always adapting to the complexities of real-life conflicts.
And to all our listeners out there, the next time you hear about a case being dismissed because of a missing party, think back to Provident Tradesmen's Bank v. Patterson. Remember Justice Harlan and those four factors he introduced and that whole idea of a pragmatic, balanced approach? Sometimes getting justice means thinking outside those rigid rules and coming up with creative solutions that work for everyone involved, whether they're in the courtroom or not.
Exactly. Provident Tradesmen showed us that to win in court, you often have to navigate procedural hurdles, figure out a balance between competing interests, and just try to find a resolution that's truly fair. And sometimes the most valuable lessons come from the cases that don't fit neatly into the existing categories.
Well said.
Yeah.
And on that note, that wraps up another deep dive. Thanks for joining us as we explored the world of legal precedents and how powerful judicial reasoning can be. Until next time.